You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver.
It is a beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning here in Atlanta, man. It's going to be like maybe 70 degrees today. The low was like 40. This is just beautiful weather. If you ever have to be in Georgia, this is the time of year to do it. This and maybe September. October, that time is the best time of year, man. I love this time of year. How about you guys? What's it looking like where you guys are?
It's very nice here in central Mississippi today, and it was very nice yesterday too.
Weather is okay in Dallas this morning. It's a little overcast. I walked the dogs for a while this morning. Good long walk. Caught a new Pokemon. But yeah, it's real overcast. It feels like it's going to rain. I actually don't know if it will, but it feels like it does. Yesterday was absolutely gorgeous. Like one of our 3 days of spring in Dallas was yesterday. So it was really nice.
I remember when I was there last March, it was really nice. It was like, wow, this is really, really good. This is the type of weather that I like. So do you enjoy working from home this week, Jim?
Oh, I did. It was so nice just to be home. I mean, I had so much to do and to try to get done while I was here and then trying to get work done at the same time. But sleeping in my own bed all week long, keeping my dogs all week long, it was really enjoyable. So I'm not looking forward to the plane ride tomorrow morning. I got up this morning and had a reminder on my phone that, hey, you can check into your flight. So, yep, that's all started back up again.
That's always the worst. It's like your weekend is almost over. That's what those push notifications meant to me when I would see them of go ahead and check in now. It's like, I don't want to. You're ruining my weekend.
Yeah, especially I fly Southwest exclusively. So it's like 24 hours before your flight, I get that notice. And I'm already checked in. I've got a good seat because I have priority, but still get checked in. But I get that notice 24 hours before my flight starts, which is, 8 a.m. Sunday morning. I get this push notification and it's like, hey, your trip starts soon. I'm like, F you.
Speaking of airlines, I guess you guys saw maybe this week that our airport has been pandemonium out here in Atlanta this week because we had our spring thunderstorms that come through that really just are biblical in nature almost. They're terrible. And it backed up traffic all over the country because we're the busiest airport in the world. And I've seen people that I know who had to fly this week who were passing through Atlanta. It's like, man, I feel so bad for you. And of course, oh, our flight is canceled. We're driving instead. Friend of the show, Douglas Stewart, that happened to him. He pinged me on Friday night. He was passing through, I guess, on his way to Mississippi. And he had to, his flight got canceled. He had to get a car and he drove on out. So,
and do a Dukes of Hazzard over the broken bridge.
I'm glad it wasn't me. That's all I can say. Yeah, tomorrow they're saying on the news here, the mayor is telling everyone to go ahead and get a full tank of gas because tomorrow is the first day since the interstate was burned down by a crackhead that everyone's going to be back on the road. So, that's going to be something.
Was that just the end of last week or no? That
it was two weeks ago, but with the way the school systems are staggered out here, like one county will take spring break 1 week and another county will take spring break the next week or several counties will do it, but it's not all the same week.
Oh, I see.
So the traffic has been, it has been lighter, and each one of those counties are so heavily populated that even one of them sitting it out is a big deal on traffic. So yeah, it's going to be nuts. Why couldn't this have happened in June or something when school was out? Give them a couple months with somewhat lighter traffic, but it's going to be bad. Jim is showing us his new case on our Skype. Is that the Midnight Blue? Is that what that is?
I think so. What I was actually doing is taking a picture of the touch bar because Skype has touch bar integration now. So it actually has hang up buttons and it says I'm talking to the Infinite Loopback group and stuff on the Skype. So I was going to send y'all a photo of the touch bar because I had noticed that before now. So I guess that's some of the new integrations from Microsoft that actually has.
Command Shift 6, Jim.
Screen cap the touch bar? Ah, I didn't know that. Huh.
Yeah, Jim. I mean, I didn't know that. That's actually pretty cool. Still send us the pic. And even though no one can see this at home, I am going to hold up my new phone case, my red phone case, which in the blue light of the monitor actually looks kind of sort of magenta or something. But I promise you, straight up red. And it's leather, which is a first for, well, a second for me since I don't normally do the leather cases. But I heard the silicone looked orange-ish, so... Big news in the Apple world this week that the long languishing since 2013 Mac Pro, not MacBook Pro, but the Mac Pro, the garbage can PC that they make, is finally getting an update. What do you guys think about this?
It's big news, but it's also like so not Apple-y. Like it's big news, but really it'll be maybe next year. Like
if you're lucky.
They had Yeah, they had to say something, right? I mean, because I think the thinking was they were giving a speed bump to the current trash can Mac, and they knew if that's all they did, that people would go absolutely ballistic if that's all they were going to do. So they had to like throw a bone out to folks and say, "Hey, look, we're working on a modular Mac Pro, for next year." So here, Gruber, here's, something to keep your site going another 3 months.
I like that. Yeah, that's kind of, they've always operated sort of like this magical Willy Wonka type of we don't talk about anything before it's ready to be announced. And that's great normally if you're introducing a new product or you have updates that come out on the regular, but you can't go 4 years without updating a hardware line, still charging full premium price. I don't know. It just passes. It goes from just being sensible to being insane if you don't say something about it. So it's kind of nice that they had that little summit where they brought Phil Schiller, Craig Federighi, and John Ternus to together, and they got three of the reporters, I guess. And one of them, of course, was Daring Fireball's John Gruber, and they talked about how they're going to update this. They're working on, and some of the interesting news that came out of that was that the new Mac Pro is going to be modular. The current Mac Pro wasn't really architected for that as much as they wish it would have been. And if you had the old cheese grater Mac Pro or you'd seen it, that was something that you could swap components out of. This was never really designed. That its successor looked really cool, but it was never really designed to offload things in the way that they wanted it to. If you wanted storage and things like that, there's no way you could have done a graphics card that would have done that. And I think the market moved toward more powerful GPUs, and I don't think they were really expecting that.
I always thought they had painted themselves into a corner with that garbage can design because it, wasn't modular. Sure, it was packed full of, big specs for 4 years ago, but it just wasn't kind of that modular design that people would love, like they had with the cheese grater.
I mean, at the time, it was you could add all this stuff via Thunderbolt, and now by the time they're ready to upgrade it, Thunderbolt's totally not even the fastest thing that you can, that you'd want to use on your computer. So
Well, hold on there. Back up, Lightning. Yeah, I mean, Thunderbolt 3 still is what? 2? Thunderbolt 2 was what? 20 gigabits? I don't even know what the specs on 3 are, but I think it's fair to say that it's not the market leader anymore, but it's still plenty fast for what it does. But I mean, what are you going to do? Hook a graphics card up like that? I mean, I think that's where.
No, I'm just saying that they made this expandable port on there. Nobody ever used it, and now even worse, it's not even the most, updated like external peripheral connection that you can have. I mean, it's just it didn't work when it happened like it was supposed to, so it's seriously not working now, is what I'm saying.
Well, that's what they made those external graphic card housings for, wasn't it?
Did they? I never paid attention to that, honestly.
Yeah, you could. They had them on OWC's website. There would be one page for external storage chassis, and they also had one where you could put in the PCIe, PCIX, PCI Express, whatever graphics card. So you could have put some big honking NVIDIA, sort of like the 1080 is now, into sort of this external thing and then connect it via Thunderbolt.
You know, we joke about dongles on here, but my goodness, if you had something like that where you had the video card tethered to the computer and God knows what else and just this spaghetti mess of wires, it's like, why not just build a chassis big enough to contain it? That seems, it's so inelegant and so awful. Anyone who buys this, like normally the case for dongles is 90% of what you're going to do, you probably won't need it for. But if you're buying a Mac Pro, the one thing that you're probably going to need more than anything else is a really capable graphics card, right? You're either doing rendering, you're doing something that's computationally intensive, but it's probably going to be graphics related in some form or fashion, right? I mean, it just seems to me, if I were going to get one, it would be so that I could do things in Premiere a lot faster than I do, or Photoshop much faster. You're going to need that. It'd be the one thing that you would need. So just, it seems so short-sighted not to accommodate a design that could handle swapping out a video card, an actual, without having to use an external dongle case thingy.
Oh, that was the whole purpose of a tower configuration desktop machine, so you could fill it up with upgradable parts.
Man, I love me some OWC, but shopping around on that site is like trying to buy things for a boat. Like anything you buy for a boat, it could be like a paper towel holder for a boat, and it's like $30 because it's made for a boat. When you shop around OWC, it's the same type thing. It's like, here's a piece of metal that's meant to shim something else to get it in the right place on your Mac Pro or something. And it's like $18 for for this little piece of something, or this external box that, you know, is made to look like this, and oh, it's $120, when you could go to Amazon and buy a similar box, not quite as nice, with the hard drive already in it for like cheaper. It was just, like I say, it's one of those sites that you love like perusing and shopping around on, but to actually order something from on there, I think about the only thing I ever bought was I bought a drive caddy for one of my older MacBook Pros where I could take the CD drive out and put in a second SSD in that MacBook Pro. And I forget what I paid for the caddy, but it seemed ridiculous at the time. But of course, the SSD prices were ridiculous at the time too. So it was a crazy upgrade, but it was neat.
Bought RAM through them before just because it's so much cheaper than it is to get it through Apple. Like when I bought my iMac, I could have filled it up with 32 gigs of RAM and it would have been an extra several $100. And I bought the RAM on OWC and it was $100. So I figured that was a wash.
Yeah, we all had to do the aftermarket RAM on there. That's a concession I will make. A lot of times if I buy something, I'll buy it as fully loaded as I can, but I blanch at paying those prices where it's insane. But the other nice thing that was announced this week was that someone noticed that the new NVIDIA cards that have been announced, and we're talking like the, I guess, not the TI, but the other one that just came out. The long and the short of it is the new NVIDIA cards, the new high-end NVIDIA cards are going to have Mac drivers, which, you know, there's currently no Mac that you're going to be able to accommodate them in physically. So I think that's kind of a good announcement, a good omen for the future of showing that maybe we'll be able to, when these new Mac Pros come out, if they do ship in the next year, we could take current high-end video cards and actually use them. That would be phenomenal. That would be a game changer.
Well, what if you still had a cheese grater Mac hanging around? Would it work in that?
That is a great question. Well, I mean, it's OS-based, all the drivers are, so you assume if you have the bus to accommodate it and you have the driver for it, then it should, theoretically. I mean, but that cheese grater Mac is, what, 6-7 years old at least at this point? I mean, the new ones came out in 2013, and that was replacing something that hadn't been updated in a long time either, so...
Yeah, to be really relevant, you would have to have had, you know, the dual socket with 6 cores each and maxed out clock speed to even be close to relevant. So you'd have, you know, 12 cores at 2.5 gigahertz or something. But I still feel like a brand new iMac would probably still run circles around it.
I hear other people complain on podcasts about how slow current Macs are if you're doing heavy compiling. And that may be true. Even my late 2015 iMac is a really snappy i7. Like, I can't imagine... Maybe my use case is just if I was rendering video, that's always something that I think that would take a really long time. But, you know, I don't know. It depends on your use case. One of the other interesting things that came out of this was that there will be new pro-level iMacs, apparently, that are coming. There wasn't much detail about it, but I think that's kind of an interesting thing that they're going to try to beef up that line and make them, which, again, kind of wonder why they don't anyway, since people, I mean, they're a popular computer. People will buy them, but...
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, Brian. You know, what would a pro-level iMac look like to you? I mean, what would they have to add to it to make it pro-level more than, I mean, like you just said, you know, you've got a snappy i7, you know, you've got that gorgeous 5K screen. I mean, what would they add to a pro-level iMac that would make it pro-level over what it is now?
Error-correcting RAM and maybe Xeon processors.
Could you really put a Xeon in an iMac? Like, it seems like you need... more space for cooling and whatnot. I don't know. I guess that's the magic of Apple. But
you know, do one of those 10-core Xeons or something.
You know, the iMacs have always been built with laptop parts, which is kind of funny when you see that what we've been told is that the notebook lines sell more than anything altogether, which kind of blows my mind. Because I don't know, maybe I know I'm the outlier, but I've never been a big fan of laptops in general, just because, and this is even from the PC world, you can't upgrade them easily. Once you buy it, you're stuck in a particular configuration. And I guess the same could be true of the iMacs, but if I want to work on something and it's something that I'm on a lot, I really want a really nice display and I really want the utility. I guess being able to make it portable is a big deal for people. But anyway, that wasn't the question you asked. So like my i7 iMac has what? It's a 4 gigahertz processor and it has 4 cores. So either something with more cores or something to you said, that what you said, Brad, with more processing power would be the only thing that I could think. Or doing something where you update the graphics to be something much better than what it is today. That's because, I mean, again, that's always been the sort of the downfall of the Apple-based computers, right? If you wanted, if you were a gamer and you wanted to play games on these, the hardware itself usually isn't that good. I think I had this one has a Radeon R9 with 4 gigs of RAM, which is not bad. But I look over at my PC with my 1080 in it, and wow, I can turn up. I'm using 4 gigs in a single game on my PC. In the meantime, I'm still transcoding video in the background and doing other stuff, and it never misses a beat. So having that parity with the PC configuration, of course, it's going to cost probably 3 times as much on the Mac side. But I think graphics has always been where it's been the letdown on the Apple side. Would you guys agree with that, or what would it take from your perspective, Brad, besides just a Xeon processor?
It would definitely need more GPU power, just in the sense that if you were going to use it as some sort of 3D rendering machine or a pro level Photoshop type or movie type rendering production workstation, again, you could always use one of those external graphic card housing and, you know, send the bits over to those GPUs versus some other internal underpowered GPU. I think mine has the same R9 4 gigger in it that yours does. That was the main thing to me, would have been just more CPU, just to give you a little more clock time on all the things that you may throw at it.
From my standpoint, I guess the iMac, or not the iMac, the Mac Mini, you could consider as the last desktop I own, since it's not portable and you've got to plug everything into it. It's kind of hard to consider that a desktop because it's just as easily not workable as a laptop is. At least the newer Mac Minis are. And I gave that one to my brother last year. And then before that, I can't remember, besides a Mac Mini, the last desktop PC or Mac I owned. I've never owned an iMac, so I've always been a MacBook Pro or MacBook Air guy. I mean, so for me, I just don't see, if I had an iMac, it would sit here most of the time without me because I'm on the road. But, you know, that's why I was asking y'all, just, you know, what would that look like to you? Because for me, it's hard to, when I just see the 5Ks now in the store, I'm just like, man, that's just so nice. And, you know, if I was just sitting there all the time, that'd be a great little computer just to have sitting there and doing the things it does. It's just not right for me. So,
well, my iMac performs several things. I mean, it is my main desktop when I'm here at home versus my MacBook, but it serves purpose for when I'm not in the house, you know, not at home. I mean, it's pretty much my file server that I would hit for any purpose to come into because I have external storage attached to it. And then it acts as my home sharing hub too, as far as streaming any iTunes to Apple TV or another laptop or whatever, iPad, if I'm watching some show in the bed.
That's my use case as well. I mean, it's my main Plex server. It does a lot of transcoding on the fly if I'm converting formats, doing something like that. Of course, all my podcast recording, editing, production, I do a lot of video and audio work on it already. I mean, I have 32 gigs of RAM in this. I have SSDs. For what I do, it's pretty snappy. There are times that when I'm doing stuff for work, I used to do it sometimes. Of course, I have a work-issued laptop. If I'm going to do video transcoding and production, I usually use that. But my iMac is faster than my 2014 MacBook Pro. Of course, I can also, because I have the Creative Cloud license that floats between Mac or Windows, I can do the same thing on my PC with a 1080, and it's lightning fast, man. It flies on that. You know, for my money, unless I were doing something that was, if I was doing a lot of compilation, if I was working in Xcode a lot, I can imagine that it would be a lot faster. And this is one where I wish we had Rebecca on the show, because I think that from a developer standpoint, she could probably give us some insight that we sort of lack. But you know, for even doing the stuff that I do, it's not that intensive. So I can't really imagine what that would look like. Something they did allude to this week as well is that they're working on a new display. And the rumor is that it's going to be an 8K display, which, I mean, the 5K, I love this 5K monitor. I mean, this is, even if I weren't a Mac guy just using this, even if I were to blow this away and put Windows on it, if I were a Windows guy, having that 5K display is phenomenal. It makes my LG monitor that's 34 inches look like garbage. And it's almost it's like a 3.5K display, but that 5K, wow, it's a difference between Retina and, you know, the old iPhones, or probably the difference between OLED and Retina will be. It's just, it's sharp. So I can't imagine an 8K display what that's gonna look like for us. But the rumor is, of course, you know, the news sites, when they said, okay, this is not coming in 2017, well, everybody automatically assumed, well, this will be 2018. I'm thinking, not necessarily. They didn't promise anything. We don't know how long they've been working on this. This could be 2019. They're starting from scratch. So I think if we assume that it's gonna be that way, we could be in for a disappointment in 2018 as well. But you never know.
Which is just another 2 years to tack on to the MacBook Pro hating. The Mac Pro hating.
I think the fact that they actually went ahead and did a spec bump now is to, it's probably going to be 2019. That's my guess, is that it'll probably be 2019 before we see this. If it was coming, like, think of this. We're already 4 months into 2017. If it was coming a year from now, they wouldn't really have any impetus to change the status quo, right? You've gotten along this long, what's a few more months? But to go ahead and bump it now, I don't know. It just seems like a bad omen to me. So maybe I'm being a pessimist.
It would be cool if they would announce it, say, at WWDC 2018 and then have it slated for some sort of parallel release with whatever OS X, Mac OS is in the September-ish timeline of 2018.
Given how small that market is, WWDC, whenever it is ready to ship, would be a perfect place to say, hey, it's ready to go, because those are the folks that are going to be the ones that would use it. I think they gave a breakdown of I think Gruber, one of those guys, did a back-of-the-napkin type analysis of the math, and the pro market for the Macs really is tiny compared to everything else. Even if you were going to do that, if that would be the place, if you wanted to announce hardware, the type of place that you should announce that. Don't just put out a press release. And it wouldn't merit its own, you know, event like an iPad or an iPhone, but WWDC seems like it would be a good place for that.
Yeah, that's just still so far off. It's kind of crazy when you think about it.
Well, you would think they've had 4 years. They should have had something out before now, but
you should have been working on this already, guys.
Yeah, this should have been on your radar already there, Apple, but oh well. So let's see what else happened this week. Comcast got into the mobile game. I can't understand anyone being excited about this. We knew it was coming. They had Spectrum before. They sold it to Verizon, maybe a couple of others. The understanding was that, you know, at some point they're going to want to get into that game. So of course their newly announced cellular service piggybacks on Verizon. So it's a mobile net. It's a virtual mobile network, the MVNO. And when you're not in range of Verizon, if that ever happens, it's supposed to use Xfinity routers. So all over the years, Comcast has been turning on hotspots. If you're just Joe Blow and you get a modem from Comcast, you don't provide your own and you don't opt out of it, you're providing an Xfinity hotspot for whoever is already an existing Comcast customer. So this is what they're planning on doing is, hey, if you have this Comcast mobile phone, you're going to be able to, if you're not on, I think even if you are in range of, if you're in range of one of their hotspots and Verizon, I think it'll still prioritize over their hotspot instead of the cellular network. But they sell an unlimited plan, which was kind of surprising to me, because the rumor that I heard was AT&T and Verizon started offering unlimited plans because they wanted to mess with Comcast, the king of data caps, because they knew that's something they wouldn't want to do. And then Comcast announced, hey, we're going to have an unlimited plan too. But if you read the fine print, it's limited to 20 gigs. And unlike the other guys who will deprioritize traffic if the tower is busy, Comcast is going to straight up throttle you at 20 gigs. So, yeah, I can't imagine. Who would want this? Who possibly? I mean, you can't buy unless you're a current Comcast customer currently, so you have to have cable or TV or something to do it. But who would want? Who does business with that company voluntarily?
Yeah, it's hard to say, because I'm just waiting for C Spire to get off their tuchus here in my neighborhood, just so I can get gigabit fiber gigabit into the house, and I'll say goodbye to Comcast business.
I'm on Spectrum now, which was Time Warner Cable. It seems to work okay. I've heard a lot of people in my building complain about it enough that some people get AT&T, even though it's way slower. I mean, AT&T caps at like 24 meg down in my building or something, whereas with the Spectrum, you know, technically I'm on 300 down. Sometimes I can see that. But this just doesn't make sense to me at all. I mean, it seems like it's just a, hey, this is something we can do and we might can make a little money off of it. I think the idea of the Wi-Fi hotspots based on their routers, I think that's a really smart idea. If you could sell that as, hey, you get 300 down, but you know, if you're not using it, or you know, like, we will prioritize your internet over anybody that might be using your signal. But you know, if you're especially like Comcast and you're the only player in a market and you can use that as you know, it's a selling point of, hey, you know, you can get really fast connections based on, you know, people have our service all over the place around here. I think that's a really smart use of your hotspots. That said, like you said, you can turn that off if you're a user. And so if users are smart enough and turn it off, which I'm imagining most are not, that sounds like a neat idea to me. I mean, like if AT&T did that here downtown or Spectrum, as many services as there are down here, then, you know, people could have a phone based on their service and live in some of these apartment buildings and not even pay for internet via the cable provider, which may be exactly why they don't do it. But I don't know. It does seem pretty stupid for you to willingly like go to Comcast for, I want you to give me more of your awful service.
Remember, they were voted worst company in America in 2014. So if you beat out oil companies and Monsanto and all these other people, these other companies that for whatever reason are disliked, that's saying something. I can tell you, I've used, you know, they're big here in Atlanta. And if I'm downtown and I'm at a coffee shop or something and I didn't want to use the Wi-Fi from the coffee shop for whatever reason, when I was a Comcast customer, I would see the Xfinity hotspot pop up and it would be like 5 bars. And you could save your credentials in your keychain on your iPad or your iPhone. It would automatically bond. But the service through that was always awful. Like it would work for a little while and then it would just crap out and I would have to re-authenticate. And the re-authentication was really the big problem there. So I discovered that if you got onto their secured, like they would present two SSIDs to you. And one of them, if you install the app, would install a certificate. And if you did that, you could connect to all of them without having to authenticate based on the fact you were a customer. It was kind of cool. It made the process better. So I stopped getting the re-authentication bug. But man, the quality was just usually so spotty.
So what if you spun up a VPN on it? Would it improve any?
Sometimes it did, but oftentimes just staying connected. I don't know. It wasn't very reliable for me when I was using it for that. I always had a problem with the fact that if I'm paying you for X amount of data and you're presenting a hotspot to other people, even if they're customers and they authenticate and it's not supposed to impact my quality of service, I don't know. I never really believed that it did or didn't, right? If they provisioned me for 60 down, they could provision an extra 5 that I'm not able to use, but somebody else could that was a customer. It just seems sort of like, why should I help you improve your network and I get nothing out of it? Again, this goes back to the conversation we had last week about internet providers selling your data. Well, it's great that you're using the connection that I pay for to give someone else coverage, but what does that do for me? Nothing. Now, you could argue, well, when you went to the coffee shop.
Well, it gives you coverage. It gives you coverage when you're
allegedly, but it never seemed to work for me.
Well, no, that's true. You know, it's like, what's the airport internet that's really awful?
I forget Boingo, the name maybe? Of it.
Yeah, Boingo. So I get a free Boingo account because I have an Amex. And I thought, oh, that's actually a perk from Amex that I might actually use. The only airport I'm really ever in is Dallas or St. Louis. In Dallas, I don't need it. In St. Louis, with AT&T, when I was with AT&T, the LTE coverage at that airport was awful, whether it be the building or the location or whatever. So I would try to use the Boingo, and it was even worse than the LTE from AT&T. I mean, I would connect to it, and it was always just a horrible experience trying to connect to it because it was one of those connect to the Wi-Fi, then you got to open the browser and try to make it pick up that you're trying to connect and then get logged in. Now that I'm with Verizon, I haven't even bothered. I just tether my laptop when I need it at the airport and don't even bother with it. So
yeah, that I'm really glad for the unlimited stuff because that, again, when it's time to refresh my iPad Pro, I'm going cellular on that baby and it's going to look out Verizon. It's going to be using it all the time and never looking back. And, you know, oftentimes, though, even though I wasn't on unlimited before, I would still treat it that way anyway. Like when I was at I could get like 100 down sometimes in some places in the Atlanta airport. It works pretty good. So better than any of the Wi-Fi hotspots do. So I don't know. I've never been a big Comcast fan. I have.
And who has?
That's the thing. I mean, I've never heard a happy Comcast customer ever. They personally have.
I'm happy with mine, actually. I'm pretty happy with it.
They have tried to screw me 8 ways from Sunday.
But the residential service is not the same as the biz service.
I would agree with you on that.
I have a biz account, and it's definitely better.
Way back when I lived around you, Brad, I remember my cable provider was like Susquehanna. Or some crazy thing right. like that. Did they get bought out? So they got
yes.
bought out yeah. by Comcast.
What was Susquehanna in Rankin County in central Mississippi is now Comcast.
Well, originally it was Susquehanna, and then it became Time Warner for a while because I was living in Jackson about that time, and I think I had Time Warner, and then Time Warner sold their interest off to Comcast in the area.
That's right, when they did that whole split off, right? Like, I'll give you this in this part of the country. And
well, you had Time Warner in Hinds County. You had what was called Rankin County Cable in Rankin, and then Rankin became Susquehanna, and then there was the weird Time Warner switch, but it felt like that only lasted for about a month as far as the name went, and then but it was always Susquehanna, really, and then Comcast came in and bought up all of the Tri-County. So
that was a crazy thing when that happened. It's like, hey, I'll give you my coverage in this part of the country, and you give me yours in this part of the country, and that way we don't have to compete with each other at all. That was, I mean, bullshit. That's the biggest just crazy cable grab that has been made. That it was talked about at the time, and I think if it happened now, it would get a whole lot more coverage because it seems to be more in the news, you know, that kind of thing.
With the current head of the FCC, it's anything goes. It's whatever you want. Yes, please. Can I have another? So I think actually, you know, under Tom Wheeler, that probably would have gotten more attention. The guy who tried to impose Title II and the other stuff, you know, the things that are good for the consumer and not the business. But now it's literally whatever you want to do. It's Thunderdome and the government right now when it comes to communication. So they don't care. But no, that was, yeah, I was living in Jackson at the time too. And it's in the time that I was there, it was like Time Warner very briefly, and then it became Comcast. Yeah, just I will agree that the business class side is a little bit better to deal with, but not by much. Wait till you have a problem and then you see how bad, how awful they can be. It is rare. I am usually Captain Polite when I'm on the phone with even the lowest of reps for these companies. But the only two that I have ever yelled at and gotten really nasty with have been UPS and Comcast.
It's the Trumper Dome.
You know, when they change. It is the Trumper Dome. Actually, that may be a good. I think we just had the show title. I don't. You know, my take though is that if Comcast has to compete for service, they don't do well at all, right? The only reason that they are what they are is that they have de facto monopolies in places. And if you actually have to compete, like if they're going head to head with Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile, and Sprint, even Sprint, they'll still come out.
Sorry, I'm just laughing. You're terrible. And even Sprint, even them.
Even lowly Sprint, even the people who didn't believe in LTE and went with WiMAX for some strange reason.
Well, when CSpire started talking about deploying gigabit residential service in this three-county area, the first thing, as soon as I saw it in the paper or on a brochure or something, the first thing I did was call City Hall here in Brandon. And they kind of gave me this weird runaround story about, well, we're not sure if that could ever happen because sort of Comcast has our arm tied behind our back kind of thing. And I was like, well, that's crazy. Shouldn't you support some competition for this stuff? And they act like Comcast basically had them bent over a barrel.
These are the same companies who have lobbyists that prohibit doing your own sort of co-op type of networks, where if you, hey, my municipality wants to build one, no, you can't do that. That's, how dare you? We can't compete with that. It's like, yeah, you could compete with that. You should compete with that.
Improve your service. That's how you compete.
We don't want competition is basically what they're saying. So, this will fizzle out pretty quickly. I have a feeling. There's another cable company that I'm aware of that's based here in Georgia that I won't mention. And they went down this path 3 or 4 years ago. They put a lot into, they were an MVNO on Sprint's network. And it's like, hey, you're going to get your one-stop shop. And I heard that at the time. And I'm like, this is a terrible idea. And sure enough, it was a terrible idea. And they got out of it pretty quick. I don't know about you, but whenever I called Comcast to deal with them, it was always, would you like to add voice service? It's like, what am I, 80? No, I don't need a home phone. Why would I want even voice over IP type of phones? I have a cell phone. And I guess that's the driver for what they're trying to do. But
I get a letter.
Triple play.
Weekly weekly to add voiceover IP service. It's so annoying. It's like, if y'all would just pay attention to the fact that I haven't ordered it yet, you'd quit sending this stuff and wasting your money.
You know, I do Nextdoor, which I'm not a big, I don't like belonging to communities and doing stuff, but I, for some reason, I did sign up for that.
I'm sorry. That was just another one of those. I don't like belonging to stuff and doing stuff with my neighbors, blah, blah, blah.
I like being kind of a loner.
I'm just going to sit down and podcast in my basement.
That is a very accurate impression, and that pretty much is me. Yeah, the discussion, I don't really participate in a lot of the discussions. Sometimes it'll be like, hey, where's a good cleaner around here that I could use? Or, hey, you know, who do you get to paint your exterior of your house?
I need a stomp ground up or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that. So the discussion came to internet providers, and that was, oh boy, they asked the wrong person on that one. So I think I was involved in like a 15 thread, you know, conversation with that. The reason I bring that up though is that there were some people who were saying that, oh, this gigabit stuff from AT&T is terrible. I like my Comcast. So I did see some person that did that, and I had to take them to school on that pretty quickly in terms of, because I think they were calling like the gigabit stuff like, oh, it's like dial up speed. I'm like, here's a video on YouTube that who shows you what this is like, and there's a bucket, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes, and they have different quirks in the bucket, and they're like, this is 56K, and they would pull out a tiny cork, like, this is 5 megs now. They pull out a slightly larger cork. When they get to the 1 gig, they pull the thing out, the stopper, and the entire bucket falls out in like 2 seconds. And it's like, that's gigabit. So that was a nice illustration for these folks. I would have to say that Comcast is so arrogant in my area that even now when they have competition, like the gigabit around here from AT&T is $70 a month for 1 gig up and down, no cap. And periodically,
that's nuts. I pay 90 for mine, and it's 300 down, whatever, 25 or 30.
They had a promotion where it's like normally 99, but even 99 for a gig up and down with no cap I'd easily pay that. Comcast has been so arrogant that their 1 gig service is still $140 a month and it's still got a cap on it. It's like, hey, did you guys not get the memo that you're competing? I remember when I called to cancel my service, and you know, they're doing their whole trying to retain you type of thing, and you know, they were like, so where are you going? It's like, I'm going to AT&T. They have gig in my neighborhood now, gigabit. Well, you know, what kind of cap do they have? I'm like, there's no cap. Are you sure about that? I think you got that wrong. I'm like, no, I think I did my research and you have it wrong, because I read the fine print. There is no cap, sir. And the guy, honest to God, said, really? I need to look into that. As if he were going to switch and he worked for Comcast. So
it's like he gets his service discounted because he's a Comcast employee, but he still switches over to AT&T gig just because there's no cap.
And even he knows it's hot garbage.
That's how convincing Brian is, folks. He flipped a conversion agent from Comcast to AT&T.
I converted them into an asset to use the CIA parlance. It's great. So yeah, this is the part where we rag on Comcast. I really hope it, you know, competition is good. You have to have competition. And it's rare that I live in a place where I have two competing providers. Like, this never happened.
C-Spire has been, you know, advertising that they're coming here in our neighborhood, and they're saying it'll be ready probably summer 2018, but I've also gotten some chatter about AT&T gigabit coming. So really, I'm not set in stone. It's like whoever gets to my doorstep first, that's who I'm going with. So it could be either one of those two.
Google Fiber is about 3 miles from where I am. They're hitting all the apartment complexes around here. But again, since fiber's already in the neighborhood and people are on it, you know, maybe Google makes the investment to come in and lay some fiber. I would seriously consider them if they would actually come in. But again, more choice, always a better thing. And that's why I think this will, I think if Comcast has to compete, they're going to have to really step up their game, because what they're offering are monopoly type deals and terms on what they're offering. And it just isn't going to fly.
It just seems like gigabit speed with a cap is just crazy. I mean, you're going to try to download a bucket, and if you can't get the whole bucket, but you can get the bucket really fast, it just seems silly.
There's not a lot of people that use a lot of data, so the whole notion of the caps, and even by their own admission, less than 1% or something actually use terabytes and terabytes of data. How about you just impose it on them instead of the other 99? That would be great. All right, happier talk. We got to change the subject here. It's going to kill my blood pressure. Microsoft released a social scheduling iMessage app this week, and that reminded me apps are still a thing in iMessage. I forgot that these actually existed. Is this something you guys ever think of, that the iMessage has its own app store that we don't even think about?
When it first came out and it was mostly proliferated with, you know, sticker packs, that was kind of neat. And then a couple of apps came along, but I found myself not using them. And I couldn't really get anybody else on board. They kind of looked at me like, well, I just use iMessage to send text, or what else do I need it for? And I think that's been kind of the consensus for most people I've run into. And I still have these iMessage apps installed, but they don't get any use because nobody else is using them.
Yeah, same here. I can see the usefulness of that. Like for our work team, you know, we're all remote working, you know, in a different city. We have a Slack specifically set up just for who's going to lunch today. Does anybody want, because we carpool to work and, you know, and then we only, you know, have so many cars back at the hotel. So, you know, who's going to dinner tonight? You know, who's going to lunch today? Where are we going? And we just set up like three different, you know, channels on Slack for, you know, different things that are going on. And I can see where something like this would be useful, except for, you know, there's those two or three random green friends in the group. They would never get to go to dinner with us.
Well, that's their fault that they're green friends. They should just stay at the hotel.
I agree 100%, Brad. 100%. Who wants green friends out to dinner with them? Stickers is, you know, about the only thing I've ever messed with. When they first came out, you know, was that crazy one where you could paste over the ones that looked like messages. And, you know, that got a little bit of press. And I think the only other one that I use even sparingly, if not even once a week, is I've got like a bad grammar pack where you could like paste over, like somebody says there and they use the wrong one. You can kind of put a sticker over it, you know, just to razz your friends. You know, that's it. So great for Microsoft. I mean, if you look in the App Store and see how many apps Microsoft has for iOS.
It's a lot.
It's a huge list. Huge list. You know, so they're really, really putting it out there. Even though in their commercials, they like to act like, you know, you want a Surface tablet instead. But they're definitely all over the iOS store.
We've talked before about Microsoft Garage, and they're the ones that seem to put out the coolest stuff. So, but if you want to be able to, let's say, you know, go out with friends to watch a movie or visit something or, you know, go get something to eat, it gives you sort of a Bing powered list, of course, but you know, whatever, a list of relevant options for things that you want. So this is sort of a side tangent. I didn't put this in our notes to talk about, but also Facebook this week released a update for AI into their Messenger app. So there's a number of integrations. I guess this is going to be the next big thing. We've done this in Telegram before with chatbot and other things that are there. But having this omnipresent sort of AI that's listening to your conversation, if I said, hey, Brad, want to go see a movie? And it's going to, do you want to go see a movie? Well, here's a list of things. I don't know if that's going to be helpful, intrusive, or creepy, or some permutation of all three.
I don't find AI creepy just because I know that there's not some guy sitting on the other side just sitting there waiting for us to say the word movie. And they're like, oh, paste, you know. But I do find that it might be intrusive, just the fact that you're waiting for somebody to chat back and all of a sudden a, you know, sort of a banner ad pops in. It's like, touch here to look at your local Fandango list or whatever.
Yeah, those on Twitter, you know, like you use some sort of keyword that a bot picks up on Twitter and they're like, oh, you're going out to dinner in Dallas tonight or, you know, you're doing this or you just bought a computer and you need, you know, tax service or some stupid thing like that, you know.
I think if you
seems kind of spammy.
I think if you ask it a question, like if let's say we were in an iMessage conversation and I'm like, well, what time does the movie whatever start? Let's say, what time does movie X start? And then something, and it piped in with some sort of suggestion at the closest theater to both of us. That might not be so bad. But yeah, I don't want it to end up being like a banner ad. So Jim had messaged me, like, I saw you were riding your bike yesterday there in Dallas, and it sent me, you know, hey, Jim's progress report. And, you know, you said that your watch was locking up on you. Like when you were doing your exercise, it would do weird things. What was that about?
Oh, man. So it wasn't when I was exercising. It was actually, I got home, I came in the building and I was trying to stop the activity, you know, like say, okay, my ride is done. And activities froze up, like just the whole thing froze up. I couldn't do anything with my watch but hold down both buttons and reboot it. And after that, it would not run, period. Like I could do other stuff on the watch. It would never check my heart rate. If I tried to start a workout, it would just act like it was going to start and then crash back to the main screen. activities would only start up and show me like the intro screen. Like if you were going to run activities for the first time, like 1, 2, 3, you know, like scroll through here to, you know, see what activities is about. Like it just, it's like it somehow corrupted the app on the watch. I tried powering off the watch. I tried powering off the phone. I did some Google searches where some people had experienced similar where, you know, turn off the privacy access and then turn it back on, turn your phone off, turn your watch off. I finally ended up last night, before I went to bed, I just reset the watch and set it on the charger and let it completely reset. Even getting it set back up, I had to go through it about 3 or 4 times, like scanning the little fuzzy picture to get it to join. And then it was just locking up. And so far today, it's been okay. I actually needed to install an upgrade on the watch, which is why it's not on right now, because I just set it on the charger in there to install whatever the latest upgrade was that I hadn't put on the watch. So I don't know. It's just a random activities froze up and it hosed the watch.
The reason I get you to talk about this right now was this morning on my way to the gym at 7:30, I got this thing saying gym's progress update. My watch has been rock solid for months, right? Since I got the Series 2 back in the fall. I click on the notification to see your progress. And as soon as I did it, it crashed the equivalent of Springboard on my watch. And it took 2 minutes to come back up. So even looking at your update crashed my watch.
Wow. That's how bad my crash was. That they sent you a report about what I think it was probably just complete shock that I did so much exercise yesterday that my watch completely was like, no way, Jim, this is BS. Yeah, this is fake. I'm just going to crash. And then for you, your watch got it and thought the same thing. There's no effing way Jim did this much exercise. I cannot comprehend this. And it crashed.
It barfed. But I thought you would get a kick out of that I haven't had a crash in forever. And as soon as when does it do it? When I open your progress update, it Springboard just died or whatever it did. I didn't have to re-authenticate, so it didn't fully reboot. That's how I know it was
Apple's iWatch version of the I love you virus.
That's just crazy. I mean, and if you just got that progress update this morning, that means it didn't send it out until something reset this morning and it started resyncing with my watch when everything was set back up. Because that all ended, you know, 5 or 6 o'clock yesterday when I got home from my ride. I did almost 1,000 calories, supposedly, on the ride. It was well over 20 miles. It was the first time I've ever went all the way around the lake here out at White Rock Lake in Dallas. Now, I did sit at the northern tip of the lake for probably about an hour. It was so beautiful out. I just sat there and was watching the sailboats trying to fight these 20 mile an hour winds and watching there was a bunch of kids out there trying to fly kites and just a, you know, beautiful day. So I just sat there on a bench for about an hour halfway through my ride and then did the rest on the way home. But it was just a gorgeous day. And so I did so much exercise that I broke our watches.
That is pretty awesome though, but I thought you'd appreciate that. And today I am wearing my Nike band. So black on black. Love that band.
You know, now that I have mine, I'm kind of wishing I'd gotten black on black too. I like it, but I feel like when I'm wearing it to work, it's a little over the top for like wearing to work. You know, I'm wearing a nice dress shirt and slacks, and then I've got this, you know, black band with yellow dots on it. And yeah, I mean, I really like the band, but yeah, I'm kind of wishing I'd gotten the black on black just because I think it.
That's your casual Friday band.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm still wearing it every day, but it feels like I need to switch back because it doesn't fit my outfit. But not that really bothers me that much, but, you know, it doesn't fit my outfit.
I do like the black and yellow, but I do like that I can wear this with just about anything and it's still not super, yeah, like you say, sort of obvious.
It's loud.
So let's see. The last thing I had on the list to talk about was there's a new open source Twitter competitor called Mastodon that's come out and is starting to gain some traction, maybe. Did you guys see this?
I did. I was a early supporter of Diaspora, and I actually did sign up for an app.net account a long time ago whenever that was a new thing. I think Jim and I both did.
I did as well.
I'm pretty interested in this, and I may spin up my own instance just to see what's going on with it instead of joining somebody else's instance. Anybody's out there who's interested, you know, I could post up the deets if you want to join my instance.
Yeah, I'd be willing to try that out. I also was on the Diaspora app.net thing, and I'm actually surprised that somebody else hasn't come out with a Twitter competitor.
This exact thing exists called Identa Identica or whatever, that Identa.ca, that has been around for almost as long as Twitter has, if not as long. And people seem to have forgotten that that was a thing that ever existed. But it, I think it, it too was federated and sort of similar to this. So
the distributed nature of it and the fact that it's all kind of one network, so you could join this one server over here but still talk on the worldwide Mastodon social network, is really interesting to me. I love that it's open source and that it's distributed.
Well, some are federated and some aren't. That's the other thing too. You have to, whichever one you sign up with, if you're doing that, you need to make sure that if you want it to be global, which why wouldn't you, it has to be federated. But there's more granular controls over privacy. Like you can make some posts private, some public, some you only share locally, some you share federated, which is kind of neat.
Which was one of the big features whenever Diaspora came out as that Facebook alternative that they were trying to spin.
I'm looking at the page right now, just clicked on from our show notes, and it actually says, due to exceptionally high traffic, registrations on this instance are closed until the quality of service can be assured for existing users.
That's the Mastodon XYZ instance. So there's tons. I think Targaryen House, good Game of Thrones reference there, is the one that I signed up on, and I think it's federated to the rest of them. So, but there are tons of them out there, and I think it has a list if you...
Yeah, there's a link you can click on, sort of a mirror list, and you can go and join up any one of them, and it shows a sort of a status page that shows how many users they have on them, what it's sort of class of services, and sort of a letter grade ranking, I guess, for its uptime or reliability.
I mean, Twitter's been around 10 years now, and the service, for all intents and purposes, hasn't really changed. I mean, that's why people give them crap, you know, because they probably could have done more with it. It's definitely not what it was back when we were all on it, you know, in 2009, 2010, you know, when it was more of a true social, like talking to one another network. Now it seems like it's...
And you saw a giant, you could actually see a fail whale probably once a day.
Yeah, the fail whale. Wow, I forgot
you could
about that.
But you could actually talk to your friends and it wouldn't be like somebody just advertising to you all day, and you just sort of have to filter out everything that you didn't want to see.
I feel like I get my news a lot of times from Twitter now. Like that's where I see a lot of things that happen, you know, sports news, Dallas local news. I actually go to Twitter for that. And I mean, I guess it's Twitter actually in the iOS store is listed on the news section as well as the social sections now. So, I mean, that's why they did that and I get it. But I mean, this looks like something to try out. You know, I don't think it'll grow into anything beyond super uber nerds trying it out. I'm all for, you know, any way that's for people to socialize on the internet and you know, do it where they feel comfortable.
I did ping the folks that make Tweetbot, Tapbot, to see if they were interested in. And of course, you know, if you already look at their mentions, it was like, no, 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 no. So they're not interested in making a client. They did make one for app.net back when it was a thing called NetBot. And I think it was $5 or $10. I bought that.
I did too.
Me three.
And I thought it was nice. So I think what I asked them though was like, I know you're going to say no to the making a client, but have you guys considered doing a Kickstarter or something similar to gauge interest and raise money up front to do something like this? Now, as much as I have pooped on Kickstarter in the past and those types of things, I'm not opposed to situations like this where putting up an investment in something may seem like a shaky or risky proposition if it's something that I believe in and something that I want when it comes to software, right? I mean, to write code, they know how to do that. They've written probably what I consider to be the best Twitter client out there, and they wrote the best app.net client that was out there. So, you know, that's something actually I would consider funding. And I think Twitterific did this recently to update their Mac version. They actually did a Kickstarter. They had enough people get behind it and they said, okay, we're going to update it and do something nice with it. So, you know, it's not unprecedented to do something like that, but I hope that they would. I think that would help me care more about it. Oh, there's a 500 character limit instead of 140. That's the other nice thing about this.
So then you just need another serial type app to chain your your Mastodon post, you know. So if you want to write a 2,000 word essay, it would split it up into 400 or 500 word posts.
Stormcrow, but for Mastodon.
Yeah.
Yeah, with 500, that would happen less, though, I think.
I actually signed up for a Kickstarter called Microblogs that is similar.
That Manton Reese is doing?
Yeah, this was the Manton Reese thing, yeah. And so it's similar-ish to Twitter, but it's also similar to a blogging service, you know, where you can have your own page with your own stuff on it, but it's also aggregated together with other people. Kind of like a Medium type thing, but but not. It was cheap, and it was, you know, just, hey, support it, whether I ever use it or not. You know, that should be rolling out in the next couple of weeks. From the emails I've been getting, it's finally about ready to roll out to where you'll actually be able to reserve your username on it and set up your microblog.
Interesting. I wonder how that's gonna shake out.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of talk about it, so I hope something comes of it. Well, I think that's all I had to discuss this week. You guys have anything else you want to mention?
I had one quick shout out, and I've said this in the previous weeks, but I cannot express enough how much I am enjoying Spotify and Alexa here at my house, especially since I've been home all week. Just being able to say, play this playlist, you know, volume up, volume down, pause, you know, stop. It's been so nice because normally I have to have my TV on all the time because I'm, you know, I'm doing the music through the Apple TV, and then the TV screen has to be on for, you know, for that to work. So, you know, the TV's off, you know, I'm just playing music. I had an old set of really nice 2.1 Klipsch complete computer speakers, you know, with a sub and two satellites that I plugged into that Echo Dot. And it sounds great in my small apartment. You know, I've been playing music on it. And then when I'm ready to leave my apartment, I can put my AirPods in, I open my phone, I open up Spotify, and it immediately asks, hey, you're currently playing music on your Echo Dot. Would you like to switch to your phone now? And I just quick switch to phone. It immediately starts playing in my ears, and I walk out the door. Even Apple doesn't have that kind of integration where, you know, if I'm playing something on my Mac or my Apple TV, and, you know, I go to my phone and start playing on the music app, you know, it doesn't know what I was playing somewhere else. Now, you know, I could be playing it from my phone, you know, to the Apple TV and put my AirPods in, and that would work fine. But just, it's really tight integration between the Spotify app on my Mac and on my iPhone and on the Alexa. I've really enjoyed it being home this week because I finally, you know, I get these short little bursts at home over the weekends, and I've used it. But working at home this week, it's just been really awesome. Just sitting here, I have music playing all the time on it. And, you know, the phone rings or something, I can just say, you know, pause, set up some playlist on my own where I could, you know, with names that were easily identifiable as playlist when I asked for them. And also just the number of existing Spotify playlists is an order of magnitude.
Now, what made you want to jump on board? Was it just because you had bought your Echo?
Right. It was, you know, that Spotify was integrated in with the Echo. And so I was like, well, I'll just sign back up for, you know, I have an account, you know, I had a free account, you know, where I had a paid account, and then, you know, my account still existed. And so I signed back up for it. I'm like, all right, well, I'll pay $10 for a month just to, you know, have a no commercials account and see if I like it again. I've just really loved it. And the playlist on Spotify are an order of magnitude better than Apple Music playlist. I mean, just this morning, there was a tweet from New Order, who's, you know, one of my favorite bands of all time. And they're like, hey, we just, you know, added this playlist to Spotify with a bunch of our rare and music and some remixes and stuff like that. You know, just click the link in Twitter. It immediately opens up in the Spotify app, and I'm playing that playlist. And that's the kind of integration that Apple Music, you know, just doesn't have for me. You know, maybe Drake is posting Apple Music playlist or you know, whoever, but not New Order. And so
it's, they're geared toward the kids, Jim, not old men.
And so I just want to give a shout out, you know, because I am such an Apple homer, and I immediately switch from Spotify to Apple Music when Apple Music come out, because I'm like, it's built in, it's easy, it's there. And now that I'm back on it, I realize, you know, the utility of what Spotify has as far as the playlist, and the integration's working great. I mean, there's a playlist on
Been able to switch between devices too without devices to have it not miss a beat is really great. I mean, it'll be literally be between syllables in a lyric, and it says like ah chew, you know, between one device and the other. That's pretty awesome.
Out of everything you've described, that's the most compelling use case, I think, for that's something that's kind of inexcusable that Apple doesn't do. Though I do want to try something while we're all here. I want to do this on the Mac and just see something.
I do have one complaint about it, about the Echo particularly, and it's because I can only, granted it's connected to my Amazon account, and all four of my family members, include, or all four people that live in my household, we all have our own Amazon account. And then we all have our own Spotify account, and we're all, I have all of our Spotify accounts as one sort of streaming account, if you will, so that we get the $15 for up to six users. Anyway, my daughter can walk in and just say, "Hey, lady, play this," and it spins it up on mine. Well, then I see if I'm in the car, it'll spin it up in my, I immediately get that prompt, like Jim was talking about, on my phone saying, "You're currently playing on your phone, would you like to play on your Echo?" And I'll say, "Well, no." And then I immediately know what's happening. I know that somebody at home, whether it's my daughter or my wife, are wanting or have just said, "Play this." Well, then I have to call them and say, "Hey, join, you know, Tether or whatever via Bluetooth and play your music, because I'm in the car trying to play my Spotify and you're sort of poisoning it." Well, then if I go back and look at my recent plays on the Spotify app, it'll say recently played, and it'll be some Christmas holiday piano music by some random, you know, that my wife may have said, you know, play Christmas music while she's in there baking cookies or something, because it's playing through my Spotify account when she tells Alexa to play it. So even if I could walk in and have it, you know, join all four of our accounts, and then one of them could walk in and say, "Hey, lady, this is Grace. Please play, you know, please work on my Spotify instead of someone else's." That would be kind of neat. Anyway, end of my little short rant. Sorry.
I want to test something here while I have you guys. I'm going to invoke Siri on the Mac for a second and just see, because I'm curious, does Siri on the Mac integrate with Apple Music?
I've never tried that.
Have you guys ever tried it? I know you don't, Jim, because you disabled it. Well, let's see. Let's see right now. Play something from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Gotta turn that off before I owe someone royalties. Okay, so yeah, okay, it does do that.
Just don't get past seven notes.
Yeah, just don't go, yeah. That's fair use, what we just did right there. But yeah, okay, so that kind of works. Still, the most compelling use case you have is the switching between the Echo and your AirPods.
That and the playlist. I mean, in the playlist, the volume of playlist.
And the playlist, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, the curation is just a level ahead.
The curation is definitely a big seller.
I use Spotify every day, even though I have the Apple Music account, and I would totally agree with you on that.
That's why I killed my Apple Music account, is because I wasn't using it. I was paying for both, and, you know, we were kind of joking around about being the one percenter music club. And it's just $15, you know, for the family. But I just couldn't justify it. I wasn't using it. And I couldn't get my daughter to switch because she's been a hardcore Spotify subscriber, a paid subscriber for a couple of years now, since Spotify really took off in the U.S. Because remember, it was pretty much just Europe only for a long, long time. My wife, I put her on Apple Music, but she didn't really have enough to make it a much of a transition. So it was like, well, she won't care. And then my son just had a lot of music that he had ripped via CD or pulled out of iTunes library into his. So I was like, well, he's not really using Apple Music either, except for being able to play like Pink Floyd, The Wall, across several devices, because it streams through the cloud if you own the device, sort of like iTunes Match. You know, it took the place of iTunes Match. So everybody's on Spotify now, and I canceled that a long time ago. So it's and we haven't looked back. I mean, I hear everybody's constantly in my house, everybody constantly praises Spotify. My wife and both of my kids, they're just constantly saying how cool it is. So it's a really good thing. Just like Jim was shouting out before about Spotify, I want to shout out too about it, because we love it around our house.
Were it not for the device switching, I would be more ambivalent from a technology perspective. The device switching is actually really cool. Being able to put in your AirPods and it just picks it up and moves it from one to the other is definitely a good thing. But I am glad to know that at least with the Apple Music on the Mac, I can invoke Siri just like I would on any other device, and it does it. Which isn't, you think that would be the case, but like HomeKit stuff doesn't work with Siri on the Mac. So it was a 50-50 whether or not that was actually going to work, but hey, glad it did.
Well, maybe that's coming at some point. Maybe they just haven't toggled on that part of the API for the Mac version.
Well, I hope having the intelligence to know that you're listening to a service, because I think Apple Music is the same way as Spotify. Spotify has to keep track of where you're listening to it, because you can't have multiple people using it at the same time. And I think Apple Music has the same restriction, because they're paying based on royalties. So they want to know where you are when you're listening to it. If you try to do it, if you're in the same household and you're both signed into your Apple Music account, I think it would do the same thing. If I try to do something and someone else is doing it on some other device, I don't think it's going to work because it's in use somewhere else.
Right. It's not going to let me play on my phone and my computer simultaneously.
Right. So I think I would be surprised if that seemed like an easy thing that Apple should have. They should have caught that and done the same thing that Spotify does there, where if you're listening on one, move it to the other. Because it's really shameful that some other competing service does that and they don't. And they own the hardware. Well, I think that's a show, fellas. So until next time, have a good week, guys. And later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @infinloopback. That's @infinloopback. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim. That's @BigJim. And Brad is @MeesterIdol. That's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.